Welcome to The CA, a podcast about news, current events, and commentary on all things atheism from a Canadian perspective. This podcast carries the explicit tag and wears it like a motherfucking badge of honor. So if you get offended, switch off. The CA records each Sunday live from Apostasy Studios. For more, please visit our Facebook page for the latest news, updates, and previews on some upcoming shows. You can email us at theca@rogers.com, and if we're amused or tweaked by your email, we'll use it on the show. And now, here are Michael and Dean.
All right, welcome to the CA. Today is, what the hell is today? Today is Thursday, March the 30th, 2017, and I just want to do a short, kind of a short episode today, but tomorrow is a really important day. I'll be releasing this episode sometime later this afternoon for Transgender World Visibility Day. And I would love to be doing more tomorrow, but sadly, at about 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, my ass is going to be on a plane with my lovely wife to Mexico. So I wanted to get this done because I think it's important. So I'm really excited because today I have joining me Alexa, blah, 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 here we go. Marissa Alexa McCool from the Inciting Incidents podcast. And her bio reads very funny. Her bio reads as a podcaster, author, and activist. And I love the one part she has there where she calls herself a motherfucking wordsmith. So I thought that was really, really good. So Marissa. Welcome to the CA.
Thank you so much for having me. What does CA stand for?
The Canadian Atheist.
Okay, cool. Not even the first Canadian show I've been on this month. Perfect.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I was on Brainstorm a few weeks ago.
Ah, okay. Awesome. I'll be honest with you, that's not one that I'm familiar with.
It should be. They're good people.
Okay, well, I'll have to reach out to them and start listening. So, all right, so we're going to talk about Transgender World Visibility Day, but Marissa, you are a trans woman, and the first thing I wanted to do is tell me a little bit, and me and my listeners a little bit about your story.
Okay, sure. I'm 31. I started transitioning in July. This wasn't my first time to come out, but it was the first time I went far enough as to get on hormones and actually start living as I truly am. Always known I was different, but growing up where I did and the time I did, I always knew that I was different. I just didn't know transgender was a thing until my 20s. So when I was younger, I always called myself a drag queen simply because that was the only word we had for what it was that I did. And for many years, including, you know, long relationships and everything, I always just considered it like a separate part of my personality. It's like everybody would meet this, you know, the presentable part, and then when we would get close, be like, well, there's this thing about me you should know. And so when I first tried to come out, I came out as a drag queen, and I remember there was someone on that forum who, you know, private messaged me and said, I don't think you're a drag queen. That, you know, they're performers. That's not what you're doing. It seems like this is actually who you truly are, as opposed to a separate part of who you are. And that kind of kickstarted the whole thing, the realization, the learning and everything. And through a couple years, it was tough. Not wanting to commit, not wanting to risk it, not wanting to put a target on my back, because I'm a big girl. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on passing, so to speak.
Sure.
And that's never going to happen by societal standards, but it got to the point where I stopped giving a shit. And I have lived as I truly am, and I will never go back. I have no regrets, except I wish I'd done it sooner. But at the same time, sort of the public outcry and the public emergence onto the stage, so to speak, was well-timed given the events of the American election and everything.
Oh, yeah. I want to commend you for I want to commend you for your bravery, and it shouldn't take that. You know, we should be able to be who we are. You know, I live in this bucket of privilege, you know, straight, white, cisgender male. And like I said, it doesn't get much better than that. The only piece of the privilege pie I wasn't born with was being born into a rich family. That's the only thing that I was, you know, missing. You know, I live a middle class life, and that's fine. But beyond that, I've pretty much got everything. And so it's hard for, I think it's hard for most people to, well, hard to relate, virtually impossible to empathize. And so I guess sometimes I hope that my, you know, my sympathy, if that doesn't sound odd, is enough, and trying to change that into support, and being an active, open ally, calling out the bullshit where you see it, and wanting people to just be able to be who they are. I walk around every day being myself, and so should you. So I think that that's really important. So you've been doing this whole I heard you first on Cognitive Dissonance. not too long ago. Those Tom and Cecil are fucking hysterical. I love them so much.
They are. They're great people.
Yeah, they really are. And so that's when I reached out to you on Facebook and started seeing some of your pictures and stuff. My wife does something similar. She does kind of a pick of the day on Facebook and stuff like that. And watching your kind of year of transition has been inspiring. And I hope that doesn't come off the wrong way. But it's been inspiring to be able to see someone just live their fucking life. Just live. Yeah,
there are way too many of us who are unable to do so. At least without losing something, whether it's their house, their family, their job. And I feel, you know, you're talking about privilege. I feel like I'm a privileged member of the transgender community, LGBT community, whatever you want to call it, because me coming out had almost no consequence whatsoever. And, you know, sure, I deal with the occasional douchebag and troll and, you know, I get people who say mean things, but for the most part, I have thousands of people validating my existence and my identity every single day. And I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm one of the ones who doesn't have to constantly correct people's name and pronouns, you know?
Sure.
So yep. I feel like with that level of privilege, it would be irresponsible for me to not be as visible as possible and be out there for especially trans kids who look around in the media, and if we are represented at all, it's usually as a joke. So I'm...
Or a token of some kind. Yeah.
Not even a token. It's just either... Think of movies. You know, if you go to any movie that's older than 3 years, we are either a joke, a punchline, a trap, or a serial killer. That's really all we have. So if I can be visible for some of the trans kids out there who think they're not represented and think that nobody in our position can live a happy, fulfilling, and successful life, I'm trying to be visible for them so that they can see someone out there who isn't just a joke and try to move on from there.
I think that's amazing. And the part of the U.S. that you hail from, I don't know if you want to say or not. I don't want to say anything that you're not comfortable with. But I mean, in Pennsylvania, you've got an Amish community with fair representation there. Where you are, I think it's. I was genuinely shocked a minute ago when you said that you didn't really face any consequences. I'm happy, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. I'm surprised that you didn't face any real consequences. What about with your family?
Well, first of all, I want to say I didn't experience any consequences this time. When I first tried to come out in 2014, it was a lot harder, and a lot has changed in the last 3 years, especially socially. A lot of the people who probably would not have supported me in 2014 were definitely supporting me in the last year. So just a little bit of progress has definitely gone a long way for people like us. But Pennsylvania, I think it was James Carville who always joked that you have Philadelphia on one side, Pittsburgh on the other, and then Alabama in the middle.
Oy.
So, you know, I live near Harrisburg, which is a pretty primarily red area without it being super rural. So I have to deal with this area of the state that is super Republican, but not in a farmer redneck way, more of just a social financial conservative way. And for the most part, they leave you alone anyway, but it's hard not to notice all the looks. Then I go to Philadelphia, where I go to school, which is about 100 miles from here. And I go to the University of Pennsylvania, which is super, super, super open and welcoming for the most part. So I kind of get to see both extremes in the same day all the time.
Wow, you do a 100-mile commute every day. That deserves a round of applause just in that. Jesus.
Yeah, there have still been professors who are just figuring that out. I've been doing it for 4 years. I'm about to graduate. Thank merciful whatever is out there.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of kneeling and trying to run out the clock and just get done with this because it has been a long journey.
I guess so. So we have a primarily liberal government here in Canada right now. Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and I'm in Ontario, just outside Toronto, and we have a Liberal provincial government as well, with an openly lesbian premier, Kathleen Wynne. And so I think we're pretty lucky in that way. But you've got Captain Cheeto down there, and he's a scary motherfucker, and he's backed up. And my wife and I were chatting about the whole election as we sat there, you know, slack-jawed, unable to believe it was actually happening. And I said to her, I said, fuck, we're going to have him forever. She said, well, no, he's so incompetent. He can't possibly do the job. And I said, he's got the ultimate fucking insurance policy in Mike Pence. No one's going to fucking touch Trump, because then you've got Mike fucking Pence, who gives a whole new definition to scary when it comes to, you know, his fundamentalist beliefs and everything else like that. So with the climate going on right now in the U.S., I mean, bathroom issues right there. How has that affected you?
It's pretty sad that there are certain places in this country where I have to wonder if I'm going to be safe using the bathroom, or if I'm going to have to ask somebody to come with me. And I still do, simply because that issue puts a spotlight on some of the most vulnerable people in the country. And you get people who, I don't want to say they're patrolling them, but if they see something that's not right, they feel it's their responsibility to, you know, peek in and make sure they have the right plumbing or whatever. And they don't seem to be aware that by peeking through restroom stalls to see if someone has the right genitalia to prevent sexual assault, you're the one who's sexually assaulting people when you do that.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. It seems so counterintuitive to me. And you said something just a second ago, you know, if they see something that's not right. Well, not right by whose fucking standard? Like, you know, I mean, you are who you are. Mm-hmm. You are a woman who had the, and I don't want to be insulting, but the misfortune of being born as you were. And now you're just trying to be who you are. But some hokey dude just says, well, that ain't right. And now I'm going to, you know, walk in the bathroom, or I'm going to, you know, do whatever it is. And you hit the nail right on the head. In attempting to safeguard what they think is their freedom or their kids or these other things, they're violating you in an unbelievable way.
Yeah, we're not people in their eyes. We're either mentally ill or we're perverts. And yet they're the ones peeking in on us in the bathroom. I mean, it's interesting to me, first of all, that they only care about women and girls being sexually assaulted when it's a trans woman in the bathroom. But if it's Brock Turner or something, nobody gives a shit. And it was probably her fault anyway. And also, I spoke of those tropes in the media earlier, and I was having a very long conversation yesterday that just drained the fuck out of me, trying to explain why those tropes have been problematic, especially when they're the only way we've been represented, and we've been represented poorly. Because when your only exposure to someone who, quote unquote, changed genders is Lois Einhorn from Ace Ventura, you're going to have a very different perspective of transgender people than someone who actually knows a person who is transgender. And for many people, I am the first person that they know who is trans. And for the most part, I don't mind being out there and answering a lot of those annoying, excessive questions. But at the same time, there are some arguments and some conversations that just drain me so quickly. I think I spent 3 hours trying to explain to a group of people yesterday why drag queens aren't transphobic, but those movie characters are. Mm. And, you know, they would say stuff like, well, is a straight man in a dress transphobic? And I said, no, you're missing the point. You know, a straight man and a straight man, any man, any person can wear whatever the hell they want. I don't care. It's the fact that when a quote unquote man is always portrayed as being trans or having a dress put on them or having makeup put on them, you know, it's always the worst thing ever, or it's hilarious because he's not supposed to be in that. That's silly. It's a mocking, condescending way to acknowledge those of us who may have been born masculine, assigned male at birth, however you want to put it, and we have enough to deal with physical and mental transition without having people think that they know better than we do because they saw it on a thing one time.
Sure, yeah. Have you, and this may be a super personal question, please feel free to tell me to fuck off, but, you know, have you been, you know, as a result of all the societal pressures and everything else going on, with you being able to realize who you are as a person, have you been involved in a therapeutic relationship?
Yeah. You can't not do that when you're transitioning. You know, to get hormones and everything, you have to see psychiatrists. And even though I used the student health at my university, which is, as far as I know, one of the few that has trans healthcare specifically, but in order to get anything like that, you have to see a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a gender therapist, and a primary care physician just to even start the process. So whenever someone says, well, I think you're confused or you're mentally ill or you have a psychological problem, it's hard not to get that somewhat elitist response because it's like, okay, in the last 2 years, I have seen 3 Ivy League psychiatrists, a psychologist, a gender therapist, a primary care physician, and have dealt with the LGBT Center in effort during my transition. Are you smarter than they are simply because you don't know anything about us? I don't think you are. I really don't.
Well, the ignorance you must have to deal with on a daily basis is, I find, just staggering.
Yeah, constantly. Ari Stillman and I are probably going to start like a once-a-month podcast called Down with the Cisness.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
It's just going to be us bitching about cis people, and no offense, but...
Oh, no, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things is we are... I say like I speak for everybody, but it seems pretty collective. We are tired of worrying about hurt cis feelings. We are tired of having to sugarcoat and dodge and explain things over and over again because they don't get it. Or whenever we say something about a cis person, them automatically taking that as a slur or an attack. You know, all they have to do is look at every other thing that has possibly existed. Mm. I don't know who said the quote, but when you've been privileged your whole life, equality seems like oppression. And if we want to have any space whatsoever where we talk with each other about everybody else without feelings getting hurt, that's seen as oppression. And there's an episode with me and Ari coming out next week on Inciting Incident. It'll be episode 86, where it is just 1 hour of us bitching about cis people. Mm. And, you know, people were offended by that. But at the same time, how many shows exist where a bunch of cis people are making fun of trans people? Like I said, think of all the movies. Think of Ace Ventura or Silence of the Lambs or Psycho or Mrs. Doubtfire or any of the movies where a guy dresses up as a girl and we get those hilarious jokes and misunderstandings. It's like, you guys have everything. And you said it yourself. You're pretty high privileged being a cishet, you know, white male. And that doesn't make you a bad person. I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. It doesn't make you a bad person, but it does give you a level of disempathy, a level of not understanding what it's like to not feel like you're supposed to be who you are, to have to hide, to have to struggle, to look down at yourself and say, this isn't right, this isn't what I'm supposed to be. And then finding something that helps you be closer to that person, and then having every Joe on the street say, well, you're wrong. It's insulting.
Wow. Thank you for that. That was just, I mean, you rhymed off a bunch of movies, you know, each one that I thought of, and I was instantly had a snapshot in my head of precisely what it was you were talking about, and could identify, like, in just instantaneously, I could identify exactly what you were talking about. And I was, never, until you just said it, I was never able to look at it through anything but my own myopic lens.
Okay. Take, for instance, Ace Ventura. That's my go-to example. We have this character named Lois Einhorn who has very obviously transitioned. She is not a man, as she is called in that movie. Regardless of the fact that she's a psycho killer, we can still acknowledge the fact that she has clearly transitioned. And what happens in that movie when they find out this twist? Well, Ace Ventura has to put a plunger to his face, burn his clothes, cry in the shower, chew gum for the rest of the movie, and then when he informs everybody else that they might have kissed somebody hot with a penis, they all have to throw up. And that's one of the examples of, yeah, when you say a man in a dress is a plot twist, it doesn't sound like that big a deal until you realize there are actually people like that who went through that transition and have gone through the pain, the expensiveness, the emotional capacity that it takes to transition, to live as who they really are. And the first association people have is either a psycho killer, someone who might have dressed up to trap a man, because that's apparently what they think we do. They think our lives revolve around cis people looking at us. But it's really hard to break through that barrier. And that's why I yell so loud. That's why I try to be visible, because I need to be out there for everybody who thinks that the transgender people trying to get into the bathroom that matches their gender identity are Lois fucking Einhorn.
Well, I don't know that I'll ever be able to watch that movie again now. And that's not, and
I
that's,
can't either.
And that's not a bad thing. And,
no.
But it's, wow, that was, yeah, again, thank you for that. That was powerful, but what a great explanation. What a great explanation. Okay,
here, so maybe I can help you with a personal example, okay?
Sure, yeah.
So, I did this on a show before, and it really helped put things into perspective. So I think for the audience, this might be useful for yours as well, all right? Tell me, in your life, has there ever been anything that a decision you made, something you wore, something you went to, anything that you felt made you a better person or made you feel better, that people, without knowing what it was or not getting enough information, told you it was wrong or shunned you or treated you badly for it? Have you ever dealt with something like that?
No. Without question, no.
Okay. I'll use Felicia's example. Felicia is a friend of mine from the Utah Outcast podcast, and she reached out to me because she was trying to understand what it's like to be trans. She wanted to be a better ally, and you said yourself you wanted me to explain how to be a better ally. So I think this is my go-to example for what it's like to be trans in the eyes of a cis person. So Felicia got divorced very young. And she was in Utah, so obviously that was not a popular decision. Mm. And the whole time, people were telling her, there's no divorce in the eyes of God. You just need to work it out. You just need to get your facts straight. You're going against everything. We're going to not talk to you anymore. So I think she was 21 or something ridiculous like that. So I said, perfect, Felicia. You just explained what it's like to be divorced when you're getting young, all right? Now let's assume that you were born married. Let's assume that from the day you were born, you were connected to this person and you were married. Everybody knew you as married. Everybody acknowledged you as married. Your married last name was, you know, married. That's the only way people knew you, and that's the way things were supposed to be, because that's how you were born. So imagine you got to that 21-year-old point and you said, you know what? I think I want to be single. I don't want to be married. It just doesn't feel right to me. I feel like I was supposed to be born single, and it doesn't seem right that I was born married. every single person around you says, well, you were married when you were born, so that's what I'm going to call you. You were married when you were born, so I really don't think we need to worry about how you feel about being single. You were born with that last name. That's what's on your birth certificate. That's the name you need to keep. That's what it's like to be trans. It's, I was born with a certain physical arrangement, and it wasn't my choice. I didn't pick my name. I didn't pick my gender. But when I reached a certain age and a certain period of personal enlightenment, I realized I have always been Marissa. I have always held that part back of me because I was terrified, but that's who I've always been, and that's who I've always wanted to be, and I have never been happier, not even close. But there are still people who want to reach out and say, well, I think you're mentally ill, or I think you're disturbed, or I think you're just confused and you need help. And it's like, you know literally nothing about me. Another great example is someone commented on my blog telling me that no one actually cares that I'm queer and I'm just whining and complaining. And it was a straight white guy from Texas. And I had to say, how the fuck would you know? You know, how are you explaining the queer experience to me given the 0% of the time you've spent being queer? Just even if everybody you knew was queer friendly and, you know, you have never seen that in your life, that is still anecdotal. You do not know what it is like to be a visibly queer person in this country. And sure, I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm big enough that usually no one's going to mess with me. But that doesn't mean that I don't still have shitty people to deal with or shitty situations or times when I have to say, hey, can you go to the bathroom with me? Or correct people when they use the wrong pronouns. Or the TSA, for instance, ever since I became legally official, I have gotten the groinal pat down every single time. Gee, I wonder why.
Well, the first example you gave was just, that was fucking brilliant. It was a truly brilliant example.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope that everybody listens to it, and then I hope everybody rewinds it and listens to it again. Because that was a really, really great example. And
I try to be accessible. You know, there was an argument going on my page the other day with a trans man and a cis woman. A cis woman, by the way, who I know to be a good person. And she was talking about relating to my struggles because of her married name not matching her ID when she was traveling. And a trans man was really upset with her by saying, no, you don't know what it's like. You don't know whatever. And I'm like, and I had to step in and say, yeah, I'm not going to use his name, but it's like,
Bob.
Yeah, we know that let's say Bob. Yeah, sure. Bob, we get it. We know this cis woman has no idea what it's like to be trans at the airport. But if we don't make ourselves accessible, if we don't make it relatable, it's just going to be us talking to us and we will never be visible. We need to put our experience in a context that cis people and allies can understand it so that they'll be on our side. The same way the gay marriage fight, transcended so quickly was because gay people were out there saying, see, we're just people like you. And pretty much the whole country in 11 years went, oh, yeah, I guess that's OK. We need to do the same thing because it is, this is a controversial statement, but it is much harder to be trans than it is to be gay, period. Because
I almost feel unqualified to comment on it, but I can't imagine, without, committing too many logical fallacies in one statement, I can't imagine how that's an untrue statement. It is, and you can break it down even further because it's, you can see a bunch of straight white, straight men. And if they see two women walking down the street together hand in hand, that's hot. But make out and then I'll jerk off, thinking about that tonight when I get home. But if it's, we have a very large gay community in Toronto. And they identify the area that they live in as kind of as the village. And it's a really big deal around the Pride Toronto Parade, which is a great thing and all that other stuff. But you see,
I have been invited to that, by the way.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's a month of festivities.
That's amazing.
Capped off with a parade where last year the Prime Minister marched in it.
Oh, Justin Trudeau, we are so jealous of you.
Yeah. And so like really, really great. And, but to see two gay men, it's more, you're right in that it is more accepted. And Do you think we just need time?
What I think we need is, you know, the Trans Day of Visibility is tomorrow, and the keyword is visible.
Right.
Those of us who are not in a dangerous position, even though all trans people are in a dangerous position on some level, we need to be more visible and we need to be more accessible. And I try to do the best I can, but I am only one trans girl. And part of the problem is the trans men kind of get lost in the shuffle in this argument. Hmm. And, you know, I talked about this on Cogdis, so forgive me if it sounds, repetitive.
No worries.
You know, I think it's harsher on people like me or Callie Wright or Emily Waters or any of the trans girls that I know because the shitty attitude toward masculinity is that it's the peak. It's the ultimate good thing. And everybody must strive toward that in order to prove their worth in society. And trans women have that privilege. They are born with that. And they go the opposite direction. They reject it.
They're like, I don't want that.
Exactly. And I think there's some kind of psychological disconnect that they go, well, that guy was born masculine, but he's not. That's wrong. That's messed up. Why isn't he with us? Why doesn't he do the things we do?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's like this in Canada, but in America, everything that's masculine is a fucking competition. And it's always trying to prove that I'm more masculine than you. I'm more masculine than you. But it's so fragile. I'm sure you've heard the phrase fragile masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was one time before I completely transitioned, but I was, you know, obviously feminine. I was just wearing purple pants and I was walking to the post office. And some guy walked by and said, "What's with the purple pants, fag?" And I turned to him and said, "What's with the fragile masculinity, Todd?" Like,
yeah,
it's like their masculinity is threatened because we exist, and that's a problem.
And it makes absolutely no sense. I mean, you know, you do you, I'll do me, and beyond that, like, who the fuck cares? Like, it doesn't, like, it just, to me, it's just a non-issue.
It should be. It absolutely should.
You know, do what you want, and there are times when I even come across as apathetic because I just don't care. You know, I do want to be an ally, but at the same time, it's like, I don't care. Do what you want to do. You want to do this, do that. You want to do something else, do something else. Wear fucking purple pants. You know, just, I mean, yeah. I prefer people wear pants, you know, but, but what the fuck, I don't give a fuck what you wear. I don't care what you do or anything else.
Let me start on that point that you have right there, because I've had a lot of straight allies say that. I've had a lot of, straight guys tell me that they feel that way, and I think they're well-intentioned, and I think you're well-intentioned, but let me put this in a different perspective for you.
Sure, absolutely.
You have never had to be challenged on who you are. You have never had someone tell you that they're going to call you a different name because they know better than you. You have never had your right to use the bathroom, your right to get married, your right to exist in public challenged. So it's very easy for you to not want to be visible. It's very easy for you to see that and go, well, they're okay. They're, you know, doing whatever. I don't care. So, you know, some people do get apathetic and some people get defensive where they're like, well, I support you, but I'm not going to like march in a parade or anything.
Oh,
well,
right, yeah.
We're marching in that fucking parade because we have to, because we need to be out there. We don't have the luxury of being able to go, oh, well, Trump will only be 4 years. I'm sure nothing too bad will happen.
Oh, that's Jesus Christ,
not
man.
Okay.
Yep.
That is not how this works. We need to be out there because our rights as human beings are being taken down every day by this asshole. And I'm not about to just sit back and let it happen.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so before I ask you the question I'm going to ask you, I will say,
sure.
I've marched in the Pride parade. I had a button. I lost it during a move, but it said, I love it. It was a rainbow button and it said straight, not narrow.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was given to me by a friend. And, you know, I would go to there's a couple of different big parades. There's the main Pride parade. There's also the Dyke March. And there's all these festivities and stuff like that. So I do try to do those things. But my question for you is, so how does the cis community do better?
Okay. First of all, if a trans person or a gay person or anyone else on the, you know, sexuality or gender rainbow, and for that matter, anyone on the racial spectrum, whatever.
Sure.
If they are explaining their experience to you, listen. Don't tell us that, you know, not all whatever. Not all straight people are like that. Not all cis men are like that. We don't need to hear that. We know that you are not like that because you're listening to us. If you were on here right now telling me, you know, not all cis people are like that, well, no shit. I'm on your show, dude. I'm not, and of course you're not saying that, and I'm not saying that you are, but that's something we run into a lot.
Well, I get it.
Where people are so ready to, you know, stand up for themselves and make it about them. And that they don't mean to, but they feel attacked whenever we say this person X, and I need all the allies of any cause to know. We know that. When you step up and single yourself out and try to, you know, distance yourself, you're missing the point and you're making it about yourself. So since we're talking about trans people specifically, cis people, if we are explaining our experience to you, if we are telling you why we are hurting, why we're going through dysphoria, why we're depressed, listen. Be there. Be a friend. Help any way you can. Offer to go to the bathroom with them. Correct anybody who misgenders or calls us the wrong name. But especially, don't wait till we're around to call out shitty behavior.
Right,
it is one thing to, you know, stand up for me if I get attacked and you see it. It is quite another if you're hanging out with all your cis bud friends and they make a shitty transphobic joke and I'm not around to hear it. That's when you need to speak up. That's when you need to knock that shit off. And I think it was Callie Wright who said, you know, sometimes it's not even about calling it out verbally because not everybody can do that. But it is also a very strong form of communication to be the one person who isn't laughing.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, your silence can scream, can be screaming. That's mm-hmm. That's for sure. Okay. So in your year of transition, I assume based on what you've said that you are pre-op.
Yes. Okay. And that's because your country's much better at this. You know, I could come to Canada and pretty much get it covered, but every place that I've gone to, it has like a 3 to 5 year wait period. So, my friends Callie and Celeste, they are having theirs in July, I believe. And
yeah, I donated to their little fund that they had set up.
Me too.
I didn't say that to be woo, look at me. I think that stuff like that is important. It's funny, just so that you know, Canada's not perfect, but everywhere but two provinces, New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island, are the two that don't cover. I think the proper terminology is gender reassignment surgery. Is that the correct term?
Gender reassignment, gender corrective, gender affirming. Those are the three that I've heard. I prefer affirming.
That sounds more positive for sure.
It not only sounds more positive, but we're not changing gender. We are affirming our own gender. That's the difference.
Right.
And that little difference makes a big deal because some people think you can't change gender. Well, technically you can't because I was born as a woman. I was just assigned male at birth, which is what that phrase means.
Right.
So the hormones that I was given are gender affirming hormones because I finally have estrogen in my body and that's what I was meant to have. And the T blockers, testosterone blockers are like getting rid of a toxic material that was in my body and was making me sad, depressed, and, you know, lethargic. So
it's like fixing a mistake, which I hope doesn't sound horrible, but you know, like you were mistakenly born a certain way and now you're affirming or you're writing that wrong.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Another way of putting it is think if you bought something without batteries, you know, that thing it's meant to work, but it doesn't work until you put the batteries in it.
Sure.
That's what hormones are like for us, or at least for me and my husband. I've described it this way a million times, but when I took estrogen for the first time, I felt like wires that were in my brain finally connected and the whole world made sense. It was like there were things I was never able to think or feel, but once the right thing was in my body, it was like, oh, that's what we need. Bam. And it was life altering.
Yeah. Yeah, the clouds open, the sun shines through. This is what my life is supposed to be. Yes. Well, I have good news for you, because being on a Canadian podcast makes you an honorary Canadian. So so come to Ontario and you can stay with my wife and I while you get your surgery.
I actually have a connection to Toronto now. I don't know if you know who Emily Waters is. But she is a trans woman model who lives in Toronto.
Okay.
And when we had plans for ReasonCon, especially with her and Eli teaming up to, you know, make Andrew Torres' weekend busy. But when I found out she was unable to go, I said, well, I'll fly you down here. You can go with us. So I'm sure there's a trip to Toronto in my future, if nothing else than to hug that gorgeous redhead for a half an hour. But I can tell you, it's going to happen.
All right. Well, make sure you keep us in the loop, and I'd love to meet up with you and have a drink or dinner or anything like that.
Sure.
Okay. So the next thing that I wanted to discuss is okay. So now, so tomorrow, how did the Trans World Day of Visibility? What's the origin of it?
I don't have that information. I don't think this is the first one, but I know there's been Trans Day of Remembrance that's gone on for a while.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen
all the people who've been killed or committed suicide. There's National Coming Out Day, but I didn't know about Trans Day of Visibility, and that's not due to lack of paying attention. But as I previously stated, I only learned what trans was in my 20s.
Sure.
So it's not like I've had a great deal of time to know the history that I should. And I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of my bookshelves, but I got a lot of shit to read. So it's in there somewhere.
Okay. And so what are you doing tomorrow to mark the day?
Tomorrow I have off from school. So my plan is to just go to a public place and be visible. You know, my husband will be hanging out with his boyfriend, so I'll kind of have the day myself. And I don't care if I go by myself or if someone comes to meet up with me. Maybe I'll go to a trail. Maybe I'll go to the mall. But I will be visible as who I really am. And I believe it was Dan Errol on Callie Wright's show who said that I will fight until my last breath until your act of being who you are is not an act of rebellion.
Hmm.
And that's what we have to do. We have to rebel against their attempt to erase us from existence by giving them the middle finger by showing up anyway.
Right.
And that is what I try to do. That is why my book started with the words, fuck you. That is why I have gone on every podcast that ever existed, because I have that privilege of being visible and validated. And if I can help, you know, one trans guy, one trans girl, one non-binary person know that they're not alone and that there are those of us who are openly defying those who would suppress us and eliminate us, I will consider it worth it. I will do anything I can to help those people, because I know what it's like to live in a place where you feel like you can't be who you truly are, and you will never get to be.
I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome, and you certainly have an ally in me.
Thank you.
Okay, so now you in your bio talks about being a podcaster. So tell us about Inciting Incidents.
Okay, well, Inciting Incidents started as a film podcast. My friend Brian and I, who sometimes co-hosts with me, we are regulars at the Con Techo in Pittsburgh, and we would always do a segment called Issues with Adaptation, which is I use my film knowledge and he uses his video game experience, and we discuss why it's so difficult to adapt video games to movies. Now, I don't know jack shit about video games, but that's the point. I have studied the Hollywood industry because I'm about to graduate with one of my degrees in cinema. So there was one class that we had in school with a married couple One of them worked in Hollywood. The other owned a production company with John Leguizamo. So, I mean, we're talking experienced people. And in that class, you would go through the entire process of what it's like to make a movie. You'd get split into groups. You'd come up with an idea, and you'd pitch it to a producer. And then you'd, you know, put names to it. You'd go through the contracts. You'd go through every step of, you know, obviously it's simulated, but what it's like to make a movie. And the end product was the final groups who got together would get together and film a scene from that movie where you'd hire actors, you'd hire camera people, you know, you would participate in that process. And I learned more in that class than any other class I've taken. And that's saying a lot because, like I said, I go to Penn, so I have worked with some brilliant, brilliant people. But I take that cinema knowledge and apply it to these panels. And I will be appearing at TechO this year, again, in the Friday Night Improv, and at least one panel where Brian will be pretending to be a pitch man, and I will be playing the part of the producer who will – he will pitch three different video game adaptations to me. And as a producer who has never heard them before, I will react and judge their ability to make it in the cinema. So that was kind of our starting point. We very entertainment-based, very trope analysis kind of thing, which we can still do. But to be honest, I have seen one new movie in the last 3 years just because it has drained me of wanting to see Hollywood movies. You know, when you have to watch a 1933 German propaganda film, turning around and going to see Beauty and the Beast is not always the easiest thing to do. Sure. So there, a couple episodes in, I think it was because of something Eli Bosnick said, we decided to host an episode where several different people would call in and talk about their attitude toward PC. And we felt that was within our range because, you know, film culture does have its PC issues, so to speak. And the first week we did it, like, everybody who called in was anti-PC, anti-SJW, all that. And then the next week, we had three people speak from the other side. And those episodes got downloaded exponentially more than our film episodes. And I think my analysis of the situation is that we were actually talking about something that mattered. And, you know, not to say that people who review films like Nostalgia Critic or CinemaSins don't matter. They have their place, and they are brilliant at what they do. But I think our voices came out much more effectively when we were talking about stuff that really mattered to us, when it was more personal. So we started, we tried to do it trading off. You know, we'd do a Friday episode that was serious and a Sunday episode that was just fun about film, but we were wasting our time with the film stuff. It was fun, but who cares? With all that was going on, it seemed inappropriate to try to worry about, you know, who's going to play Ghost in the Shell or whatever, when we have someone who wants to strip away rights from people winning the presidency.
Right.
And, you know, we had Eli Bosnick, Tim O'Neill, and a couple other really good people on right around the 40s and 50s. One of my favorite episodes is where we interview someone who survived the Paris terror attacks. And it was one of those moments of, this guy survived the Paris terror attacks and he wants to talk to us? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So, who are we?
Yeah. And it was around that time I came out episode 70. And, you know, shortly after that, I came out everywhere else. And the show has just completely changed since then. You know, there's of course, a lot of trans focus, but I feel like the show means a lot more now because of where the voice is coming from and the people we've gotten on the show. So right now, the show is us talking with a variety of people. Well, I've hosted a lot of them by myself, but us talking with a lot of people about very serious issues and trying to make it fun sometimes, but not at the expense of taking it seriously.
Sure.
And that's what Inciting Incidents has become. Even though, like I said, episode 86 that comes out next Friday is just me and Ari bitching about cis people. But one of the I interviewed Dan Errol. He and I had a phenomenal conversation. I've interviewed Matthew O'Neill. He and I had a great conversation about being a Bible scholar because he's an atheist Bible scholar. I had Callie Wright on for two straight episodes. Ari's coming on. And we're having important conversations like the one we're having now. And I am much more fulfilled doing that than I ever was talking about the difference between Marvel and PC or DC or whatever it is. Right. I don't
PC, DC, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And your bio also lists author. So tell us about your books.
Okay. Well, author includes my blog and my column. I do have a blog that accompanies the podcast, incitingincidentpodcastblog.wordpress.com. And sometimes that's just where I bitch a little bit or talk about issues that aren't enough for a full show. I also host the column in layman's terms on lordsofpain.net, and that is a wrestling review because I'm a former pro wrestler. And recently I was published in Gleb Sapersky's Intentional Insights, using my pro wrestling experience to describe Donald Trump as a professional wrestling character. So I'm kind of all over the place when it comes to writing, but writing books is my true love. I'm currently working on my third book since my transition. I wrote five before I transitioned, and I'm working on getting the names changed and all those. But my coming out piece was called The PC Lie, How American Voters Decided I Don't Matter. And I wrote that in immediate post-election, and I kind of encapsulated what it was like to be LGBT in the immediate aftermath of Trump getting elected, realizing, oh shit, what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think you talked about that on Cogdis a little bit. You know, the fact that you had basically just sat down and before you knew it, you had just pages and pages in front of you.
Yep. I was sitting in a class, and it was a three-hour class with a German professor with an English accent who just has one of – I don't know if you've had any German professors, but they are very direct and they don't hold back. And – there was only one boy in that class. You know, they thought there were two, but I transitioned, you know, I came out in the middle of that class. But, you know, that whole class was just depressed that day. That was the Monday after the election. And we were just talking about what's going to happen. What are we doing? And I realized I was typing. Like, I opened a document and I just started ranting. And I was typing while participating in the class. That's how upset I was.
Wow.
And when I looked down, I had 30 pages. And I sent them to Andrew Torres, my lawyer, and said, do you think I can make a book out of this? And he's like, yeah, go ahead. And then, you know, Eli got involved. A couple of friends of mine got involved. Some people I didn't even know sent me stuff to publish. And then, of course, I reached out to my favorite NFL player in history, Chris Cluey, who, you know, was just like, oh, I just had him on the show and yacked with him for a little bit on election night. He's going to, holy shit, he said he'd write the foreword. And he will also be at our live event in July. Like,
That's awesome. He's a
super awesome guy. I met him a couple weeks ago in California. And if there's a nicer person on the planet, they're tied. And coming out April 21st, it's available for pre-order at rissmccool.com, along with my other book, The PC Lie. It's a novel called False Start, and I wrote it dealing with being LGBT in a conservative area in the early 2000s, which is something I can relate to.
Sure, yeah.
And it's also about dealing with mental illness, in the sense that the main character has an undisclosed mental illness. It wasn't important what it was, but he suffered from hallucinations and anxiety attacks. And his father was the only one who was able to get him through them. His father and his best friend, Ezra, were the only two people who knew what it was like beyond the facade of star football player. But then 9/11 happens and his dad gets recalled, you know, to active duty.
Sure.
And he and his best friend are estranged because his best friend went from being Ezra to Ellie and they don't talk anymore. So he finds himself alone. And nobody is there to keep him safe or help him through these dark things that happen to him. And when he tries to tell people about it, they just tell him, well, that's really selfish of you to worry about that when your dad's fighting for our country. You know, it's really selfish of you to worry about yourself. And the guy just, you know, loses every little bit that he has until there's only one person standing there who still knows who he is. And that's, of course, Ellie. And that's the story I tell. It's the story of Ezra. It's the story of Ezra, Ellie, and Logan. And it's put in high school, but it deals with a lot of contemporary issues. It's set in a small town that my dad grew up in, which is a lovely town. And I didn't mean to disparage them by saying that they were like that. But it was the first story I needed to tell, because when I grew up here in central Pennsylvania, I was tortured mercilessly for being feminine. like I said, I didn't know trans was a thing, so I was just feminine. I wore makeup or I wore feminine clothes, and it was torture daily of just getting beat up, getting called names, not even knowing where it was safe to sit and eat lunch. And anytime someone tells me that I'm making up what the queer experience is like, I remember when I was in sixth grade and two kids got off the bus and beat me in my own driveway with a baseball bat.
Jesus, and I think, fuck.
Yeah. And I just sit there and think, these people think I didn't go through this on my journey. They just think I stepped out one day, became Marissa, and, you know, went on GAM, and suddenly everybody loved me. But they, and even some of my allies and friends don't realize, like, before they knew me, I wasn't always like this. I wasn't always so confident. I wasn't always so secure in who I was. I went through a lot of years of, you know, depression and anxiety and dealing with physical assault, dealing with sexual assault. It was no easy journey to get to where I am. And I think some people forget that the Marissa they know now is a product of surviving that.
Well, you did. And yes, I think the world is a better place for having you in it. And
thank you.
I want to thank you so much for helping to educate a straight white dude from Canada. And I'm sure that that my listeners will get a lot out of this. How can people reach out to you if they want to get in touch with you?
Okay, well, the first place to go is rismccool.com, RISMCCOOL. That has ways to order my books. It has all my stuff, you know, all episodes of Inciting Incident, all the blogs. You can go to incitingincident.libsyn.com for Inciting Incident. I also host the Doubting Dogma podcast. I co-host Full Frontal Nerdity Deluxe, which only has one episode, but we're working on it. That's that's a show where they talk gaming stuff and I just sit there and look pretty. And then, of course, like I said, Ari and I are talking about starting Down with the Cisness, which will be for non-cis people by non-cis people. It's still in the development stage, but we're working on it. And, yeah, of course, cis people are welcome to listen, but it will be by, you know, me and Ari and whoever else we get on, no cis people will be on it, and it will not be for them. It will be for non-cis people to have a space where we can talk about that without worrying about hurting cis feelings, because we're both tired of worrying about that.
Yeah.
My email address is rismcwriting@gmail.com, and it is always open to anyone who has a story or just needs to talk to somebody. I answer all my emails. You can find me on Facebook, Marissa Alexa McCool. Both my personal page and my public figure page are available. Twitter, Riz McCool. I'm all over the place. If you type in my name, you'll see not only my work, but a lot of the podcasts that I've been on. And I've lost count of how many that I've been on. And it is certainly an honor to be on a new one. It always is. And you're a good dude, and you're doing a great job of being an ally. And I feel fortunate to have you on our side.
Well, thank you so much. And I think, well, we've been on for a little over 57 minutes, which is this is only episode 5, but you now rank as the longest episode.
Yay, I win a thing.
Exactly. There's no prize. But listen, thanks again. And I urge everybody to go out and order your book, listen to the podcast, read the blog, and get involved. If you have the ability to be visible tomorrow, then do that and be an ally. And the other thing that you said that I'm going to reiterate, and that is, if you see transphobic shit go down when there isn't a trans person there, and you said this, it's echoing in my head still, and it's important, that's when you speak the fuck up. That's when you say, that shit's not cool, and I'm not going to put up with that. And those are ways that you can be an ally. So,
yes. Thank you for that.
I think it's really important. And with that, I will leave the open invitation to Pride Toronto. I'll meet you down there. And
close off to get a passport.
Yeah, well, if you don't have a yes, you will have to get a passport. Do that, and if we make it down to Allentown to see our friends, and I'll definitely reach out to you, and I'll come visit you in your neck of the woods.
Sure, and I can always meet you halfway or anything like that too. So just let me know.
All right. Well, this has been awesome. It's been great, and I thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And all right, guys. So I'm heading to Mexico tomorrow, but get out there for Transgender World Visibility Day. Be an ally, and I will talk to you when you get back. All right. Awesome. Take care.
This has been the CA. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please drop by the iTunes store and give us a review and subscribe to get the latest episodes as soon as they release. Just a reminder, the views expressed on this broadcast are solely those of the hosts and are for entertainment purposes only. Never take advice from two guys expressing an opinion on a podcast. That's just silly. See you back here soon.